WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to another Monday Night Talk, a somber Monday Night Talk. It is September 11th, 9/11. And as you've heard during the day, we've brought you news in regards to some of the ceremonies and the things that have gone on to commemorate the 16th anniversary of the attack on our country. You know, my guest this evening, we're not going to focus on that, but I will take a moment with each guest and kind of get an idea as to where they were. Get them to kind of weigh in on 9/11 just for a few moments. Then we'll jump to the subjects at hand. We'll start off after traffic, after we check in with Mr. Malcolm Alter. We already have waiting here, warming up the bullpen, is a State Representative Matt Muratori, as well as Jen Babcock. Now, there. Here to talk about one thing. Of course, we'll start off with the state rep. We give the state rep an opportunity. It's his turn in the rotation. That's what I like to say, because we have this thing called the State House Report, and we give all of them, state senators, state representatives, whenever we can lure the governor, the lieutenant governor, the auditor, the attorney general, you name it, we get them on the program, just kind of get an update on certain things that are going on at that moment. And so it's Representative Muratori's chance, and it's kind of a twofer because he is a dignitary that will be putting on his dancing shoes this Saturday, and so we're going to get an update to where he stands at this particular moment, because when we did the segment a couple of weeks ago with Rob Hakala, and we had Kathy D was part of the program, and we also had Cheryl Bartlett, who is a former commish with the Department of Public Health, and the Mass Department of Public Health. We chatted with her, and rumor was that not everybody had done their dance routines, or everybody was slowly catching up. So we're going to find out where the representative is at, seeing that it's just a few days away. We'll get his take on it. And again, we'll talk about this fantastic event, Dancing with the Dignitaries, it's all for a great cause, as it's going to help to raise money for the Plymouth County Suicide Prevention Coalition. And they're doing this. I think this is the fourth year they're doing this, if I'm correct. But we'll talk with Jen Babcock about that. And then we have Chuck Giovannetti, a good friend from the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass. They got their big Paws in the Park fundraiser coming up. And guess what? It's Saturday, September 16th. Now, this is a day event, so you're looking to book your dance card. Ha, ha, ha. I believe the Paws in the Park is during the day, and then you can purchase your tickets to see some of the fine folks who are going to be dancing, and some of those folks who will be judging the dances. And you know all these suspects, you know all of these names, so be prepared for that conversation. Dance with Dignitaries coming up in just a moment, but Chuck Giovannetti talking a little bit about the Paws in the Park. Then I'm going to have a chance to speak with another local author, and last week we spoke with Dave Wedge as they launched the Ice Bucket Challenge book about the Pete Frady story and how one man was able to make an effort viral in order to raise over $220 million for ALS research. Well, we get another local author, a great young lady who I've had a chance. She's been a colleague of mine back at when we used to work at the Enterprise together. She has written a book called Shallow Graves, The Hunt for the New Bedford Highway Serial Killer. This is her first book. And so we're going to have Maureen Boyle in to talk a little bit about this brand new book of hers. Then, as the theme, as we've tried to do over the past couple of weeks, there are a number of people who are running for office in the city of Brockton. There's a couple of communities that have preliminaries coming up. I know Scituate will be having a special election to fill one of their seats on the Board of Selectmen on the 19th. Brockton is also having a preliminary. We'll have at-large councilors Bob Sullivan and Moises Rodriguez, as well as Ward 2 City Councilor Tom Monahan, will be joining us here in studio.
I love this time of year. Rustling leaves, a crisp wind blowing, apple picking for homemade apple pie, a sunny day in a corn maze, a bonfire on a cool night. Cigars, and a half gallon of hot apple cider. Apple pie. We made it ourselves. This has nothing to do with Brennan's Smoke Shop, but everything to do with life. It's short, yet so sweet. Kind of like pumpkin spice coffee. It comes and goes like autumn wind. Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and now on Pope's Island in New Bedford. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the very best smoke shop in Massachusetts. Customers must have a valid state or federal ID to enter the store. Message me on Facebook.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Thank you for joining us. Keeping that radio dial set right there, 959watd.com. Also, worldwide, 959watd.com. Check out our website. And first up, we start with State Representative Matt Muratori. Representative, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Thanks for having me, Kevin. Good to see you again.
I'm sure you were busy today, as yeah. many were, reflecting on the 9/11 anniversary, 16 years.
Yeah, the town of Plymouth every year for the last 16 years holds a memorial on Spooner Street in North Plymouth. Former Selectman Dick Quintle actually put it all together when he was a selectman, and it's still there. And every year, I'm very proud of our community that we actually celebrate, that day. We'll not celebrate, but we recognize that day.
And
the fire and the police in there, and it's a really moving experience. And this year, I actually spoke with Vinnie DiMaceto, and it was very moving.
How have things changed since that day, 16 years ago, in your eyes?
Things have changed a lot. I mean, obviously, the airports are really the biggest thing, but just you're more aware of your surroundings, I think, wherever you go, particularly if you go out of your comfort zone. You're just more aware of what's happening. I mean, my younger kids, I have four younger kids, two older kids. The older kids remember before, and the other ones don't remember. And it's just a different world, and it's hard to explain it to them how different it was 16 years ago.
Yeah, see, it's interesting for me. I'm actually, in about 7 weeks, I will be leaving the country. No, not for good. Going on a little bit of a trip to Paris. Mm-hmm. Me and the missus like going to Disney World, Disneyland. Mm-hmm. Thought we would go to another park, but the one in Paris. And it's one of those things that we've talked about. You know, it's going to be different. And being outside of, you know, our borders, what will it be like? You know, not that it's any big deal, but it has changed significantly, sure. drastically since that day 16 years ago.
Personally, I always loved to fly as a kid, and when I was younger, I loved to. And then after that, for some reason, if I could drive, I'll drive. Mm. I don't know why, but it's just that hesitation. Speaking of Disneyland, we just came back from Disneyland in California last month.
Did you?
Yeah, took the kids out there, and it's not Disney World.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
It's not. It's like a blink of an eye. It's like going to Universal.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very similar to that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like Disney World. It's just something special.
Yeah.
So I'll leave it at that. Yeah. We have a couple of moments before we put on your dancing shoes and talk a little bit about the big event coming up this Saturday. A couple of things that you sent to me in regards to some of the things that we could chat about. Probably should talk a little bit about the Alzheimer's Walk that's happening this Saturday. Oddly enough, it seems that not too long ago I was chatting with yourself and a couple of other individuals because of a missing lobster that was represented, that cause, that walk.
Mm-hmm. And the lobster, we're proud to say, is back on the waterfront where it belongs. It's actually Brian Fagan, myself, and Peter Brown actually commissioned it. But it is back there, and it's back there for the Alzheimer's Walk this Saturday. It's the 14th annual social walk for Alzheimer's. Mm. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to host it and be the MC for the last 6 years. So I'll be there on Saturday morning actually doing that. Last year we had close to 2,000 walkers on the waterfront.
You're going to have to pace yourself on Saturday.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
You have a lot going because you also have a ribbon cutting going on. Right, don't you?
Ribbon cutting is
it's
Thursday.
This week, though.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Thursday.
The ribbon cutting at the Plymouth South High School is Thursday. It's a busy week. It is a very busy week, though.
Definitely have to pace yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me your thoughts on the new high school, Plymouth South.
You know, I haven't seen it yet. Thursday night will be my first night.
Larry's giving a thumbs up. Larry must have done a football game.
You saw it, Larry? Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
It's speechless, really.
Yeah, yeah.
It's beautiful.
Is it much different than Plymouth North?
Oh, it's a different floor plan.
Is it?
Altogether.
Yeah.
Of course, you got to remember it has the Voc-Tech in it.
Voc-Tech
so the shops are more hands-on and stuff. Especially the electrical. Being someone that took an electrical course, I was able to describe the entire room and how it would work to my mother when she went in. She says, "What do you mean eventually they're going to take down all these walls? We'll have to put new wood up because they use the wood to do their set up their circuitry on that they're going to do in front of the teacher and stuff." But each one of the shops has a classroom, and they've got an awesome television studio down there. The culinary arts program, which has always been the best, is even better now. I mean, you can't ask for anything. But it's more inviting when you walk in. You don't walk into a cafetorium with a staircase in it and jagged walls of block. When I worked there, we were afraid that a kid was going to get pushed into it. And then one of the teachers told me that somebody didn't. It scratched the face and stuff. But hopefully we'll get at least 50 years out of this one down there in Plymouth.
We should, we should.
We'll see what ends up.
One of my daughters actually is attending there. And they had an open house back in the middle of August, but we were away.
Right.
So she wasn't able to go. So she's now just starting to get used to it.
Okay. I want to touch staying in Plymouth. What's any news on the Plymouth 400 and that celebration?
Yeah, well, it's really crunch time now. I know the state has been putting in a lot of resources, not just dollars, but also infrastructure going on the Plymouth and more to come. I know the Plymouth 400 has hired a fundraising person to actually now start getting the big private dollars as well. So they're really moving along.
State isn't digging into its pockets any deeper than it could, huh?
Well, to date, it's probably about $4.5 to $5 million the state has put in with infrastructure. I think we talked before the Mass Works grant, what they did for the T Wharf down there. There's another $1 million going into the from DCR into the whole waterfront and put a beautification in there. There's a couple more Mass Work grants in now for the new Water Street Promenade that the town meeting is going to be taking up this October. So there'll be more of that to come as well. But it has to be some private dollars coming in as well.
All right. Well, again, we get so many things here in regards to you're giving updates to, and that's good. That's the idea of having you come in, our representative, and talk a little bit about it. Last couple of times I've had a chance to speak with representatives and state senators, the conversation still is about state revenue. It's still kind of, there's a flat line to it.
Yeah, August came in not as good as expected. So it is still flat. And, you know, there's some things that, that we are looking at. I know there's an Airbnb tax that we thought we'd bring up before session ended at the end of July, but that's been postponed. So I understand we'll probably be taking that up. And that's simply a tax on folks that a lot of folks actually have homes that they put on HomeAway or Airbnb or something. And,
a form of subletting, so to speak?
Yeah, exactly. And in fairness to the hotels and motels, there should be an even playing field, I believe, at least.
Well, it's funny you say that. Should it be an even playing field for the taxi companies that do medallions and Lyft and Uber?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I had to ask that question because I've heard that fight where some people say, "Oh, I'd rather do Lyft or Uber compared to a cab driver." But you know, it is what it is. You know, there was a time when you had horses and buggy whips. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? You know, you moved on to automobiles. Now, soon we're going to have self-driving cars.
Right. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. Tell me about it. One other thing. Now, you hear it listed in your notes talking about the governor's vetoes. Is he going to be doing something in regards to... he's already done?
He's done the vetoes. Yeah, the vetoes were done back in July, and we didn't take them up before session ended July 31st. So
you have to retake them up?
Yeah, so we're back in session. We've been off for 6 weeks. We're back in session this Wednesday. Mm. So I believe we're probably going to see some of those vetoes coming up before us.
Mm.
But, you know,
Is it along party lines? Is this something that could be a consensus?
It's gonna be hard to tell because the way the revenues are coming in. It was delayed because we wanted to see how the revenue was going to come in this summer, and the revenue is not coming where it should be. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what is actually going to be on the docket for us to take up. I don't think there's going to be a lot of things.
Okay, good. Definitely good to know. Folks want to know more as to district hours, or how they can reach you. How can they do that?
Yeah, they can call my cell phone number, which is 508-930-2979, or my office, which is 617-722-1914.
Okay. Now, who is this young lady that you brought with you this evening?
So, Jen Babcock is the chair of the Plymouth County Suicide Coalition. And her and her cohorts have actually bamboozled me into doing a fundraiser for them. And I have to tell you, I mean, I really thought hard about this one. Usually I'm pretty good. And I'll say, yeah, sure, right away I usually answer. But this one, I said, let me get back to you in a few days. And when I heard that there was some folks from the Hedera for Heroes jumping out of airplanes to raise money, I said, you know what? I think I can do this. I can do the dancing rather than jumping out of an airplane. So it's been a lot of fun. It's going to be this, and Jen will talk about it. It's this coming Saturday. But we've had a lot of fun with the Fred Astaire Studios. They really have stepped up and donated their time for all of us. Their 10 45-minute lessons they've donated to us. And I am the one that's behind in the lessons.
Okay.
I still have 3 more left, but I'm actually doing the salsa,
it's
a harder
Monday.
Dance.
Come
I know.
On.
I know. We got 3 more lessons this week. And
we got Rob Hacklett dancing in the hallways. He's putting on exposés.
You know, it's funny. I saw for the first time we all met, I didn't know Rob was doing it. He didn't know I was doing it. Mm. And I saw him, and we both looked scared to death. We both were, but you know, we finally said,
I was more scared.
Yeah, and we said, really? It's for a good cause. So let's just suck it up and let's just do it. And we've been having fun with it.
And let me just kind of throw this out there. This is going to be a dance competition. This is the first year, correct?
It is the first year.
But the coalition has been serving the community for four years?
We're in our fourth year.
Fourth year, serving community schools, local organizations, businesses in and around Plymouth County, and even some in Norfolk County.
Correct.
Okay. I kind of erroneously said, I meant to say that earlier, but it sounded like I said that this Dancing with the Dignitaries is the fourth annual. It is not.
It's the first one.
It's the first one. Yes. Okay. So
maybe you'll do the second one, Kevin.
I might. You want to see a guy with two left feet.
So do Rob and I, but you know what? They're pretty good teachers.
I hear Rob's pretty good, although the picture looks like it could say something differently that we have on our website. But that was, you know, around his first or second lesson, from what I understand. So, Master of Ceremonies for the evening, State Representative Tom Coulter. Who chose him?
I have to say, one of my steering committee members, Deacon James Greer, who is a dancer at Fred Astaire Studios, was the one that made all the phone calls, so I cannot take any credit or blame.
Well, I'll tell you how it went. They wanted Tom to actually dance. No, I'm not really a dancer, so he took that role.
Okay.
And then they asked the sheriff, and they asked the DA, and they weren't really either. And then it cut down to me.
Well, see, it seems to me what they did is like, oh, yeah, I don't want to dance, but, you know, I'll be a judge or, you know.
Yeah,
I'll,
exactly.
And I will say, first off, belated happy birthday to State Rep Tom Coulter.
Yes.
I believe yesterday he celebrated his birthday. So,
yeah.
happy birthday. Did send him a text message. I'm not late, but I'm just saying it late on air here.
I think it was a big one for him, too.
But then we got Christine Harvey, who is a judge, Fred Astaire at Dance Studios, right?
Yep.
Tim Cruz, Plymouth County DA. He's a judge. Yep. Joe McDonald, Plymouth County Sheriff.
Yep.
He's a judge.
Yeah.
And then the competitors. Of course, one of them right here before us, Matt Muratori. Now, who is your dance partner?
My dance partner is Heather. Heather has been a dance instructor there for 9 years, and she's fantastic. We're just having the best time doing this.
Chemistry?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Bill Tilden, athletic director of Old Rochester Regional School District.
And I understand, by the way, he's bringing down a busload of people.
Yeah, it's a popularity contest.
And they also contacted me. They're bringing a banner.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff.
I better
happening.
Bring my banner. I'm glad you told me that. I'll bring my banner too.
So we also have
to warn you guys.
Plymouth County Commissioner Sandra Wright. We have Nicole Perry, WATD's own host of Powerful Women. We have also mentioned Rob Hackler, who is the host of the South Shore's Morning News. And joining us on the phone line right now, former commissioner of the Mass Department of Public Health, Cheryl Bartlett. Cheryl, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. So, you heard Matt Muratori. Did you hear the part where he says he's still a couple of dance lessons behind?
Good.
Cheryl actually saw me the other day at the lesson, and actually I saw Cheryl's outfit. It is stunning, Cheryl. I really like your outfit.
I'm a little scared.
Yeah.
Now, Now, Cheryl and Representative, I will tell you that we do have a crew here that would love to bedazzle. I know that they are already offered it to Rob Hackler, and I'll bet you anything, because once Kathy D. and Christine James get their bedazzle kits out, you're done. if you feel beefing up your ensemble, is the way to go.
Oh, I'm pretty good with ensembles, by the way. Yeah. I studied fashion before I was a nurse.
Cheryl, nobody likes a show off here.
Oh, come on now.
So tell me, while we have a couple of moments here, I mean, how do you guys feel in regards to getting out there in front of you? You have people who are going to be judging you. You have an audience that's going to be clapping. Who knows? You might have people who are Facebook living this. I mean, is there any nerves involved with this?
Oh, definitely. A lot of fancy footwork that you got to keep in order, and I think if you get nervous, you could start fumbling your steps. So,
yeah, I've had some elected official friends that have been around a while, and they say, "Oh, you got to be careful with things like that because you never know what sort of picture they're going to take and they're going to use against you," and blah blah blah. It's like, I'm not really worried. You know, Heather said to me, she says, "You know what? Don't worry about making any mistakes. Just go out there and have fun and remember why you're doing it. And you know what? Once I started thinking that way, I'm not worried about any mistakes I made. I'm not worried about all. And you know what? I'm dancing better because of it. And that's what she said would happen.
See, I think next year, you should throw Jim Cantwell under the bus.
Like, I think he should do it.
I think that Jim Cantwell, who was in the studio,
I think Jim Cantwell was asked, and he said no.
He snuck in.
He did. Well, Jim, I actually double booked. And so, I did offer Jim, if he wanted to kind of hang out and be co-host for the evening.
Come on, Jim.
He could. He could. But then he owes me next week. He has to come in and do a segment as well. Now, if you were to put your money on anybody, and let's see what kind of a political answer Representative Jim Cantwell is going to give. Who would you put your money on in regards to doing this dance competition? Now, here
Cheryl Bartlett. Cheryl by
That's
five.
That's only because I'm not dancing, right?
My money's on Cheryl, too. Yeah.
That was definitely a good answer. And I just want to make sure that I let folks know this is all taking place this Saturday, 6 p.m., Emerald Hall, 30 Central Street in Abington. Tickets are $35. This is for adults.
$20 for kids, yeah.
$20 for kids under 18. And you can purchase your tickets at www.brownpapertickets.com/events. And do they, now, Jen, do they scroll down and look, or is there a number here? Because I got a number, 304-2596.
That's the event number. Or there's an event search, and they can put in Dancing with the Dignitaries.
And they can do that. Okay. There's going to be a cocktail reception. There's going to be cash bar, raffle prizes, and... Again, an exhibition of dances by professional and amateur dancers from the Fred Astaire Dance Studio.
Yeah, so if you really like professional dancing, they will be real professionals there, too. That will be dancing for a little bit, so not just Cheryl and I.
And they make us look good.
Yeah, exactly.
How easy now? Are you gifted with dance, Cheryl? Do you feel that it's come easy to you?
Well, let's say I jump around at rock and roll dancing, so I've never done. I'm doing the tango, so that's a little complex. But my instructor is good. Matt and I were talking about this the other night. They can take it and kind of chunk it down into little segments that you can. Yeah. Get through, and then you piece them all together, and all of a sudden you feel like you're dancing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's not like any goofy footsteps on the floor that you got to follow or anything like that? No. Either one of you? No.
Oh, yeah. I have a few moves, but I'm not going to tell you about them tonight. You have to go.
Oh, I got a few moves, too. Wait till you see Cheryl.
Oh, boy.
My wife's going to be in surprise I can do these moves.
I'm trying to peek at Matt, but he goes in a private room, so we can't see what he's doing.
Yes, I have to be in a private room. I'm special.
And there's no mirrors in that room, right?
Oh, it's a big mirror. Oh, yeah.
The whole wall is mirrors.
Yes.
That's the scary part.
That was my requirement, a big mirror and a private room.
and a ball in the middle of the floor. If you will, Jenny, if there's anything that we've overlooked here in regards to this special event, what would you like to share?
Well, we're very excited. We're very honored to have the people that are dancing for us. We actually have people that are willing to dance next year already.
Like Jim Cantwell.
Yeah, Jim Cantwell.
Jim Cantwell.
Jim's turning six kinds of red.
We hope to raise a lot of money. It will allow us to do more trainings within the community. The biggest thing is to get the word out there about suicide prevention and intervention and get the word out there that there is help available.
And it's one of those things that we have to talk about more. I mean, there's a lot, we talk about mental illness out there, and that's part of this. And by talking about it more and raising money for it and raising awareness, you know, one of the other reasons I really did this is my daughter in high school last year, soon after I was asked to do this, had a friend in high school that hung himself and committed suicide, a young kid. And, I said, you know what, we got to start talking about this more. I
mean, amen.
Younger and younger people are doing this, and we've got to stop that trend.
Well, do you want to give out your phone number, or do you want to give out an email address if folks want to either find out about tickets, find out about the event, or maybe somebody wants to make a donation if they can't make it to see the representative for Cheryl dance. Yeah.
So they can contact me. My number is 508-254-9320. I do have tickets on hand. We do have a Facebook page, which is Plymouth County Suicide Prevention Coalition, and there is a link on there as well to get tickets.
Okay. Cheryl, anything you want to say in closing?
No, I just want to thank you for helping us get the word out. As the representative said, this is a really important public health issue, more and more becoming a leading cause of death. So we are having a lot of fun with it, but it's a serious subject.
Yeah, right.
Representative, anything in closing?
Yeah, I echo that. Thank you, Kevin, and thank you, Rob and Nicole and WATD for what they've been doing promoting. I've heard more of my friends and colleagues that have heard that I'm doing this. I'm getting a lot of ripping because I'm doing this, but I know because you guys are getting the word out on this. So we
really are you going to at least have half of the House chamber at least attend this?
Well, it sounds like half of them are going to be there anyway. So. No, but I have my whole family coming, and we've got a couple tables that we purchased, so we're going to have some people.
Well, I
and
wish
a banner now, too.
And a banner now. So. Well, I want to wish both you and Cheryl and Rob and Nicole and all the competitors the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
And
Thank you. And
we will look forward to hearing the results, and maybe we'll see it on Facebook Live.
Actually, PAC TV is actually going to be.
You know, we want to see it live. We don't want to see after and where they cut it all out.
I'll be there. I'll be
attaboy. There you go, Jim. There you go. Next year's dance
and
this year's Facebook Live. We're going to step aside when we come back. We're going to talk a little pause in the park. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. People ask me, is there anything they can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
Is there anything I can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
See? There is. Those big gravel trucks, when they're being loaded, rocks get stuck in the framework of the bed. Truck hits a bump, rock hits your windshield, it pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we transition away from dancing to PAWS, the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass, their ninth annual PAWS in the Park. It's a walk, a celebration of our furry little family members. Hopefully you have a furry little family member. And this is going to be an event that's going to be taking place this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Walk will start officially at 11. I would think there's a registration at 10 a.m. And this is at the Sheep Pasture. This is the NRT Sheep Pasture.
Right. National Resource Trust in Easton, the Sheep Pasture right there on Main and Route 138.
And boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, that voice is Chuck Giovannetti. He is a board member for the APCSM, and he's a repeat offender on this radio program. And of course, like I said earlier, Jim Cantwell, state rep, is kind of hanging in. So if you hear another voice other than mine and Chuck's, it's because Jim has a question.
Learning as we go.
Learning as we go. You got a furry critter at home?
We have two. Yes, kitties. Little kitty guys.
Okay.
Yes.
So talk to me about this event that's coming up.
Kevin, like you said, it's our ninth annual PAWS in the Park. It is a fundraiser. It's a family fun event. Short walk through a nice, relaxing field. And then events going on, including a demonstration by Norfolk County Sheriff's Department on canine demo. There'll be agility demonstration, as well as ability to participate in agility with your dog. Family is welcome. Dogs are welcome, obviously. Costume contest for your pets. Costume contest for you as well. Little hint, sometimes if you make a pairing between you and your pet, you have a good chance of winning. Just a little hint.
So okay. Now you have a critter of your own, right?
I do. I have.
Now, are you allowed to, seeing that you are a board member, are you allowed to compete in these things? Could we see you and...
You could see me and Dory in the contest as well. I tend not to win or make myself just participate.
Okay.
She's not really in the public eye a lot. She likes to be a little quiet on the side.
It's not a bad thing, though.
No.
It's definitely not a bad thing. So please continue.
So it's fine. So it's a good time. Like you said, it starts at 10. Registration starts at 10. Events start at 10. We have some vendors. We have food. Easton Fire Department's going to be there with one of their trucks as well. So it's a great opportunity for the kids to learn a little something about the fire department. Get your picture taken on a fire truck. All ages are welcome. That usually tends to be a big event for mm-hmm. the adults as well. The walk kicks off at about 11, and then we have contests going on. Lunch will be served, or available, I should say. The agility demonstration. An organization called Macaroni Kids will have some crafts and fun for little ones to do.
Does this have anything to do with glue, macaroni, and paper?
I think it does. I don't know a lot about it, but I might stop in at the craft table myself just to see what goes on. Okay. A couple of our vendors and sponsors actually will do some nail clipping and some great things that you can pick up for your pets.
Fantastic. Talk to me about the importance of this annual event. I know that you guys are a nonprofit. And you came in not too long ago.
Was it 2009 we started.
Yeah, I was going to say it was like 8 years ago that you came in after the MSPCA kind of had to leave the area.
That is correct. They're still in the area. They just had to close their facility. They were no
longer... It was a financial thing, right?
Correct. They were no longer going to be doing animal sheltering in the Brockton area. Myself and several other volunteers and good support from the community started up an organization. Registered a 501c3 charity, a nonprofit charity, got licensed by the Secretary of State and started an organization called the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass. We go by Animal Protection Center. It's a lot less words. Been around since 2009. The fundraising is an important piece. It's a fun day, and I encourage for people to come and do some fun things. But it's also the fundraising that's there for us. Just as an example of a couple of things we do, Jim said he has two kitties. We go through, on a monthly average, about 850 pounds of cat litter.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a lot of litter.
Yeah.
30 heads of lettuce because we have small animals. So things
not just rabbits, but
rabbits, guinea pigs, etc. So an average intake for us is about 58 dogs, 26 cats. We take in some smaller animals as well. We also adopt out about 82 adoptions a month. And our medical expenses, just from normal medical expenses, just for checking in animals that are coming in, is about $2,000 a month.
Wow.
So there's a little bit of expense there to, in addition to what everybody else is familiar with, heating, lighting, electrical for your air conditioning, maintaining a safe, clean environment, etc. It's one of the things we pride ourselves in, is that people come in and say, it does not smell like a kennel.
How important is it, some of the projects the organization takes on? I know that when we had a visit to Campanelli Stadium, we had a couple of the ladies, we had two Kims in.
Yes.
And one of the conversations was about a young kitten that was found that had damage to an arm or one of its paws.
Yeah, we think there was some abuse there, perhaps. Excuse me. Paw was damaged and was at risk of amputation. Healthy cat, otherwise, young. We have a program called Life is Precious for that exceptional type of expenses that we'll see from a medical process. $2,500 was the estimated cost to do the surgery. Funds were raised, and she's doing wonderful.
So you reached that
plateau
of $2,500?
Yes. The community is very good in coming around for small, continually supporting us, both people and the businesses in the area.
Jim, do you have a question?
No, I just wanted to thank you for your work. Our little Charlie Brown, our cat, we were able to get from the Marshfield Animal Shelter, and I know how tremendous amount of work that goes in, one, to rescue these animals. Are you aware of any of the things that are taking place with some of the animals from Texas that are being recovered in this area? Any ideas? I'm just reading online that there's a great deal of work that you're already doing. I'm not sure if there's some any connection to some of these pets that have been rescued.
We don't at the present time, Jim. This is a very fluid situation, so there's a lot of the emphasis is to move some of those animals out of that region to places that are close by, out of those shelters. And the reason is to open and vacate the shelters so that when there's situations of the ones that they rescue locally, they have some place to go very quickly locally for that.
And
they do work together.
Where's your shelter located, by the way? I was taking notes.
Thanks for asking. We're in Brockton, right on the East End Line, 1300 West Elm Street Extension. Right in Brockton. It's like I said, Brockton on the East End Line.
Nice. And I think Larry said we were getting a call that there was a Sandy who was calling about nail clipping, and she wanted to know, is that for adults too? There was a Kevin that she was interested in getting nail clips. I don't know.
Aren't you clever? Aren't you clever?
If he's got $5, we may make it work.
I get $4 and change. That's all I can do to help you. Anything we haven't touched upon in closing, but you feel is kind of important. And again, just so folks know, this annual event coming up this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., at the NRT Sheep Pasture, 307 Main Street in Northeastern. $25 per person at the gate. It's a fantastic, gentle one-mile trail walk. Mm-hmm. All kinds of events that are going to be going on. A festival atmosphere throughout the day. And it's important to help the APCSM. What if somebody can't attend this event, but yet they want to help your cause?
A couple things they can do is find out if they got a friend or family member that is attending, mm-hmm. and sponsor them. Each walker is encouraged to raise money through their walking to come in, so they may know somebody who's already doing that, and that's a great way to sponsor their friend or family member. But they can also reach through our website, apcsm.org, mm-hmm. and they can make a donation at the facility to the facility right through there.
Probably the other thing I would ask you, I think we had a young dog named Rufus. Was it Rufus?
Rufus. When you were talking at Campanelli?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's he? Has he found a forever home, or are we still looking?
I believe he's still in a foster home.
Ah.
And what we do is a lot of times...
I want to get an update, so...
Sure. Yeah. Sure. What we do is a lot of times if a pet is a little stressed in the shelter environment, even though it's a good environment, they're taken care of, it can be a little stressful for some animals, so we'll put them in a foster home. And I believe Rufus is in a foster home. That I don't know the details on, but I can follow up with you on.
Next time you're here, let's try to make sure. Or if one of the Kims
happens to come along. They couldn't make it because they had prior engagements. Correct. So we would have one of the Kims joining us to chat a little bit about what's going on at the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass. Don't forget that great event. What do you got going on for the rest of the evening?
For the rest of tonight?
Yeah.
I'm actually going to go have dinner. Someone's making me dinner tonight, so that's an actual good thing as opposed to doing a takeout order, so it's pretty good.
Excellent. Well, we want to thank you very much for joining us here and at least keeping us up to speed. I know that from time to time, we don't give enough time to your organization as we should do on a regular basis, so that's why whenever there's a few moments here on Monday Night Talk. But I know that the South Shore's Morning News has featured animals from
The Animal Protection Center. Yeah, yes, yeah. We've been Pet of the Week. We've had a couple of our guests as Pet of the Week, so that's nice.
Definitely. Well, let's do this, Larry. Let's take an early break, and we're going to step aside. And when we come back, we'll speak with author Maureen Boyle. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD-FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, welcome back to the second hour of Monday Night Talk. It's a festive atmosphere for such a somber day, a somber event, remembering the 9/11 events that took place 16 years ago. Where were you? Where were you as an individual? Yeah, I'm talking to you as you're sitting at home or in your car listening on your radio. Where were you? Do you remember? My next guest, that's probably going to be my question to her, because I think at the time she was a reporter for the Enterprise. And I'm kind of curious as to what. And we're talking about none other than Maureen Boyle, who is the author of Shallow Graves. This is her first book. I'm holding it right in my paws right now. The Hunt for the New Bedford Highway Serial Killer. There's one problem with this book, Maureen.
And what is it?
It doesn't have your autograph.
Give me a pen and I will sign it for you.
Where do you remember where you were that day? Where were you? Were you in the newsroom?
I was in the newsroom at the Enterprise.
60 Main Street?
60 Main Street. It was primary day. It was towards the end of the press run. Well, no, it was between editions. They already had the first edition go through, and the first plane hit. Mm. Michael Lane, who was managing editor at the time, he had basically stopped the presses and was replating per edition as they went along.
Yeah, those are the good old days. You guys used to have...
They had five editions.
Plates. And, oh, yeah, it was a five. I thought they had seven at one point in time,
didn't
they?
But at that time, I think there was five.
Yeah, they had whittled it down.
And it was just crazy up until about 8 o'clock that night.
Wow.
Because once the paper was out, then everyone started working on a special edition for that afternoon.
What was your assignment? Were you out?
I was in the newsroom. Everyone that was there in the morning, everyone was making phone calls, trying to see if there was anyone local who was a victim. And, you know, sadly, there was a number of people from this area who were victims. But it was crazy. People were calling, getting reaction. In some cases, we're talking to people who
asking questions of people who they were getting the news from us of what was going on.
Jim?
And just think of how much people came together. Just a remarkable day. The day, I had just left a few months before working for Bill Delahunt. So I remember calling in and everyone being concerned that they couldn't find him. He didn't have his cell phone with him. So that they didn't know if members of Congress were being targeted. Think of up around here. I was working at the point in Quincy Center, and they sent everyone out. There was a building there, the Bank of America building, that they thought could be a target, which clearly wouldn't have been. But just the ideas of people, just the uncertainty of knowing what could be coming next. Because
and there was a feeling that, oh, are we at war?
Right, right.
There was a real, true feeling of that. It was very, very scary. And I remember afterwards, in the days afterwards, how quiet everything was because there was no planes
no
in
planes.
The air.
No planes, I remember.
And it was just still, absolute stillness everywhere.
But also think, and Kevin, I know you were just going to talk about business, you have to go into the book, how that brought people together. And no matter what differences we had, that people would speak as a unified voice, and that, we clearly don't want that kind of thing to happen again, but we do need to come back to the ideas of people having a common vision, common desire, make things better for everyone. And I know you, but we want to talk to you about your book, though.
Well, I want to segue, Scribe. Because she no longer writes for the local Scribe. She now is, you're the director of journalism, the journalism program at Stonehill.
Yes, I am. I've been there.
Do you miss the paper?
I really do.
Do you miss reporting on these three guys out back here? You didn't do the local, but you did kind of like
I did
breaking news.
I did crime.
Yeah, crime.
I did crime, you know, courts, crime. and that sort of thing. In general assignment.
Do you miss it?
But at times I do. I mean, the journalism world is...
changing.
It's changing, but it's an absolutely wonderful, wonderful profession. And I encourage anyone who is younger to go into it. It's a very honorable job, and it's a lot of fun.
What's the impression that you're putting on some of these young folks who are coming in to sit down and take a course with you and learn about journalism? Because it's, I mean, slowly the print media is falling by the wayside. I mean, it's still there. It's still clinging on to...
But journalism still continues.
Right. I mean, in another form.
But yeah. The journalism still continues. I mean, years, many moons ago, when TV was the big thing, everyone thought that was going to kill radio news, and it didn't.
Mm. Well, I mean, they got a lot of their content from radio.
Yes, and just radio and TV gets a lot of content from print, from the traditional, what they call legacy print.
It's funny you say that, because let's not forget, there was a day that the Enterprise shared a bit. I mean, they created Brockton Enterprise and Times, which, anybody know what that stood for? WBET.
Ah,
oh, my God. the former signal that WATD now owns, 1460 AM, which is on from 6 AM to 6 PM. It's not on the air now, but just you said that, and it was the first thing that popped into my head, because there was a time that, you know, that we shared a space. It was kind of actually, I was on both sides of the wall, where if I wasn't a colleague of Maureen's, I was over in the radio station. So it's very cool.
Yeah, you've always been very, very busy.
How's Kevin doing, your husband?
He's doing very well.
I see you give him a little bit of love in the book.
Yes, I did.
To Kevin, who said the story must be told. Is it the families of the lost are looking for answers? Kind of give us the genesis of this book. Now, for folks who may not know, you were a reporter. You were somebody who broke the story back in 1988 in regards to some of these missing women. Nine missing women.
In 1988, slowly, a number of women went missing in the New Bedford area. All told, it was 11 that we know of. 11 missing women went missing between the spring and September of 1988. And slowly, their bodies began showing up along highways in the suburbs surrounding New Bedford. All of the women were drug addicted. All of the women... were from, well, not all of them, a good number of them were from the greater New Bedford area, with very large families, very close families. Some of them were reported missing immediately once they went missing. Some of them were not reported missing.
which made it very difficult when it came to investigating it.
Very, very difficult. And in some cases, identifying them was very difficult because they didn't know who they were. They had records for some of the missing women, but it turns out that some of the women who were found dead, they didn't expect, they didn't have any information on them.
How is it different writing, somebody who, you know, is used to writing for a certain deadline, a certain method of writing, to being more methodical in putting together your information and writing it to a different, a compelling audience?
Well, it was challenging, writing in a longer form, but I really enjoyed writing it. It took longer, obviously.
Mm.
When you write for a longer form, you discover you do need much more information, a lot of records, a lot of details, more interviews with people. You're crafting your story differently than you would for a daily publication.
Yeah, so you kind of took a mix between, you know, some of the stuff that was published, but then even conducted your own interviews.
Yeah, over the course of preparing and writing the book, I interviewed close to 100 people. Not all the interviews were used directly in the book, but I did re-interview a number of people to get the details, other details that you may not capture in daily journalism.
I found that when I picked up the book and I started thumbing through it and reading it, I was expecting it to be coming from Maureen Boyle, the journalist, somebody who's out there and, you know, investigating this, but yet I found it was different. Did you have a struggle with, should I write it from my perspective or should I write it from just from the facts?
As
you were being told stories and as you were starting to compile this stuff from interviews?
That's a good question. I really don't like to interject myself into a story. I mean, some reporters, they can pull that off very well. I'm just not comfortable doing that. And I think that telling the story from the point of view of some of the family members and the investigators was really the way to go. To give the reader a feel for, yes, they are there, and this is what was happening in real time. As a reporter, I discovered a lot of the stuff that I thought I knew about the case. As I was discovering more information, realized I didn't. There's so many things I didn't know.
Very interesting. Representative.
I just wanted to ask, too, because we definitely want to highlight the book again. Name, Lauren, and for Shallow Graves.
Shallow Graves, A Hunt for the New Bedford Highway Serial Killer by Maureen Boyle.
B-O-Y-L-E.
Nice.
What profile, Maureen, as you were developing? I know working with police, when they're trying to develop a profile of someone who is a mass murderer, what were you finding from this? And I don't want to give away any of the ending of your book, but... You know, you said for 11 different women who were savaged. What profile of the killer?
Or
killers.
Or killer.
You're thinking of Silence of the Lambs type person.
During the course of the investigation, now keep in mind in 1988, things were very, very different then than they are today.
Sure.
The investigators did work with the FBI to develop a profile, but they didn't. At least the investigators found it to be a little bit too general for their needs. I think they were hoping that the FBI would provide that magic key that said, this is who the killer is, and unfortunately, it doesn't work that way.
Who were the suspects? Who are the individuals who have been suspected? Who are the common thread in your story? Because I found one of the suspects very interesting, an interesting person who probably would have... who would have thrived in today's social media the way he kind of conducted himself.
Well, yes, there was one prime suspect was a New Bedford attorney who had drug issues of his own, a man named Kenny Pont. He was the only person ever charged in the case. He was charged with one count of murder. Again, no one has ever been convicted with going on trial or convicted in the case. He was an interesting individual. He was in some ways a little bit larger than life. He liked to taunt the district attorney at the time that it was Ron Pina. He liked to talk to reporters off the record. He often called reporters regularly and would ramble on.
Yeah, there was some of the things. There was one of them in regards to calling the DA and mentioning the fact that, you know, he got a tip that maybe, you know, some of the guys coming off the ship, maybe, or a truck driver, you might want to look into this, or even taking to, at a particular time when he was no longer living in the state, taking to the airwaves to defend himself.
Yes.
So to speak.
Yeah. And this, of course, was a time before social media, before Twitter, before things like that. I mean, he would have gone crazy on Twitter. He didn't like to be in this. He portrayed himself as someone who didn't like to be in the spotlight, but he did go out and talk to reporters, and almost wound up in the spotlight more because of how he acted.
How often did he bend your ear?
My conversations with him were very interesting. He would call. Sometimes in the morning, sometimes in the afternoon. And the conversations would always start this way. Hi, this is Attorney Kenny Pont. And I go, hello, Mr. Pont, how are you doing? And he goes, this conversation is off the record. And I would say to him, well, it can stay off the record as long as you don't confess to murder.
Right.
And then sometimes he would hang up. He would say, you know, F you, and hang up, or something else. And then,
To put it bluntly.
Yes, yeah. No four-letter words allowed on the air.
No.
I know that.
No,
in
trouble.
Yeah. And, but sometimes he would just, start talking and then hang up. But he never said anything of substance, mostly about how he hated the DA.
Interesting.
And how he was getting railroaded.
Now, there was another individual, Anthony DeGrazia.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the role that he played. How was he instrumental in your book?
He came to the focus with the investigators when a number of women came forward to say that they were attacked by a guy who picked them up in a section of New Bedford that was known for prostitution. They said that this person, and they did not have a name at the time, that this person would bring them to a secluded area and grab them by the throat and choke them until they were nearly unconscious. Some of the women just fought back and escaped.
And you kind of depicted that in you kind of described that.
Yeah.
In your book.
Well, in one of the cases, I did interview one of his victims at the time, and I had access to a number of reports, police reports, and other information that detailed testimony by those victims.
Wow, interesting. And it says here that DeGrazia actually he actually fit a serial killer profile.
Yeah, a general profile. But he was never, to be fair to him, he was never charged with any of the murders. He was charged with sexual assault, but he was never, ever charged with murder.
Hmm.
And he was on the radar well before, for quite some time.
Interesting.
Just a winner of DNA evidence, how it would not have been as developed back in 1988.
And I was going to ask, is there any thought of reopening this?
Well, murder cases are never officially closed.
Right.
So
it's the cold case.
As any additional evidence comes forward, the DA's office investigates it. And with advances in forensic technology, different DAs have sent out things to be tested.
What were your conversations like with troopers Marianne Dill and Jose Gonzalez?
Josie Gonzalez.
Okay, Josie Gonzalez. I'm sorry, I apologize.
Yeah. He's Portuguese.
Okay. Continue.
Yes. They're absolutely superb investigators, as were all of the investigators on the case. They're very honest about you know, what worked, what didn't work. But they were also very careful in my conversations with them not to release certain pieces of information that only the killer might know.
And if you had to, in the book, did you have to hold back to a certain degree and really sift through the information
Yeah, I did sift through a lot of information because there is some information that I know investigators had that took them on down paths that really wound up being rabbit holes. And for the sake of the reader and not to confuse the reader, I tried to stay on a very, very focused path.
What is on the horizon for this book? How has it been received so far? It was released a week ago?
It was released a week ago. Hmm. We had a book signing and talk on Thursday at the Country Club of New Bedford in Dartmouth. Hmm. There was well over 100 people there. They ran out of books to sell.
Good.
And it was. I hope people like it.
We're getting some good reviews here. You get some interesting folks who have weighed in on your book.
Yes,
I mean, which is especially one of them where you and I had a conversation about Hank Philip E. Ryan.
Oh yeah, her stuff is awesome. I absolutely love her mysteries.
Any thought of going in that direction of being somebody who goes from fact to fiction?
If I could write mystery stories as well as she does, I'd be thrilled. She is just an unbelievably good and kind of and funny mystery writer.
So I take it you've read all her books.
I've read a number of them. I read her first one a number of years ago, and that in some ways it kind of inspired me that here is someone who is a working journalist, and she found time to write a mystery. And it's like, wow.
Well, she calls your book riveting, heartbreaking, authentic. This impeccable researched chronicle, a terrifying chapter in history, will keep you turning pages as fast as you can. Important, powerful, and compelling. This is true crime at the highest level. And this is, of course, coming from another investigative reporter.
I was just absolutely very, very humbled when I read that. I couldn't believe it. I was just very pleased.
Any hope that maybe somebody might approach you to write a screenplay about it? Maybe put it on a put it into another medium, whether it's TV or movie?
I have no idea.
I'm asking you, though. Is there any... I mean, are you just taking it...
I'm taking it one step at a time.
Okay.
This is, again,
your first endeavor.
Yeah. I mean, the main thing that I really am hoping through the book is that someone will come forward and say, this is the killer.
Wow.
Put a renewed focus on the case. Because it'll be 30 years next year, and there's these families out there that there is, and closure is such a weak word. I mean, they do not have answers, and they deserve that. And there's two women who went missing who their bodies have never been found.
Goodness. Wow. Jim?
Thank you for bringing it to their attention, and it really is... it's a window to a whole underbelly of society, and just from your crime reporting for the years at the Enterprise, and then to bring this to people's attention. And from my limited time in the DA's office, my 4 years, you could never tell the difference between someone was coming in that could just have a motor vehicle issue and someone that could come in that had just been involved with a murder. So
yeah.
It's really fascinating.
And keep in mind, in 1988, it was when it came to heroin addiction, there was not a lot of treatment available for women. There was a limited number of beds. Families really didn't have any place to go to seek help. No one talked about it. There was no support groups like Learn to Cope.
But it wasn't nearly near the epidemic that it is today either, correct? I mean, still something that was, I mean, you talk about 88, you're talking about heroin wasn't the only drug that was prominent on the streets. You had crack cocaine, which is huge.
In New Bedford, there was not crack cocaine.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you, there was no crack cocaine.
Did it bypass New Bedford?
Yes, it did.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it did. It did.
Was it a matter of cost? Was it cheaper?
Well,
heroin a cheaper?
No, I think it may have had something to do with the dealers at the time. Crack cocaine was not in New Bedford at that time.
Okay.
Yeah. And the addicts at that time, they did come, many of them came from middle class and upper cost families. They were not, quote unquote, street people.
Okay. We have sitting in the room right now, other than Arthur Maureen Boyle, we coming up in just a couple of moments, we got the council president. I think he's a second-time offender. Might be a third-time offender. Third-time offender is council president Bob Sullivan. We have a Ward 2 city councilor Tom Monahan and at-large councilor Moises Rodriguez. They're here. How often have you had to interact with these individuals over the years?
This one right here.
Do you mean the assistant mayor?
Yes, the assistant mayor. He has been, Moises has been around for a very long time, and I'm very glad to see that he's much more active in government. It's a long, long time coming.
Okay.
And he's worked very, very hard in representing the Cape Verdean community, and it's, I'm pleased to see this. Okay. And I can say that now because I'm not a daily journalist and reporter.
Okay. How about Bob and Tommy Monahan?
I don't think we've ever had any dealings, have we?
No.
That you were a crime reporter. You'd never see any of them. That would be awful.
No. Oh, you'd be surprised.
Except some of the pizza he'd sweep it, he'd grab at George's. Yeah. That's it.
That's right.
What about Bobby, though? Well, how about, you've never had any?
No, I don't think so. I left the Enterprise about 7 years ago, so.
Okay. Yeah, he's been on
12 years.
12 years, so.
My wife works at Stonehill College, so thank you for what you do over there for the kids as well.
It's a wonderful school. Absolutely love it there. And the kids, the students, the young adults are really the true leaders.
The up-and-comers.
Oh, yes.
Up-and-comers.
Oh, yes.
And I have to say, it's funny that Maureen is here because Maureen and I actually participated in something not too long ago, and I mentioned his name earlier, the birthday boy.
Tom Coulter. Yes.
You were there for that morning where we had talking about the media and how it has changed and how it's changing and, you know, dealing with a president like Donald Trump who there's no... You know, there's no buffer. He's posting stuff on social media. How social media has taken as gospel these days.
Which is very dangerous. Just because someone says something doesn't mean that it's true.
And the flip side, just because we don't like the things that are said, you can't just label them as fake news and ask all your followers to discount the information as well. And I think that is a danger for someone who's in politics who realizes that we, you know, you take the good with the bad. There are times you make mistakes and you have to come and face them, but it's not healthy for us to have an all-out war on the press.
No, it's very, very unhealthy and it's very dangerous.
Right. I couldn't agree more. Folks want to find out more about your book, and do you have any upcoming book signings
that you want to
tease? Is your time
to
tell our listeners about your book.
Well, they can get it at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.
Just strictly the paperback?
The paperback. Okay. It came out in paperback.
Are you going to do Kindle? Are you going to do anything else?
Yes, it is available on Kindle. There are e-editions to it.
Okay.
I have an event. I'm trying. They keep on adding up, so I get completely confused of where I am going when. According to my calendar, where I am going this week is, I believe I am in Hingham. Today is...
We do have listeners in Hingham, at least two or three.
Yes. Yep. On Thursday, I'm at the Barnes & Noble in Hingham at 7. On the 16th Saturday, I'm in Tewksbury at 2 p.m.
A little far, but okay.
A little bit far.
Yep.
On the 26th, I'll be at the Wareham Library at, I believe it's 5:30.
Do you have a website, or do you have?
Yes, we've got two websites. One is the main website is Shallow Graves, the book.
Okay.
My blog is Maureen E. Boyle, writer. So just Google that through WordPress, and it'll come up.
E standing for Elizabeth. Eileen, you're not going to tell me.
I'm not going to tell you. You're in the ballpark.
All right, all right. You tell me when we go to break. Yeah.
And also on the Amazon, author central page. I keep on updating the on my appearances as well as on the publisher's website, which is upne.com. That's University Press of New England. The book can also be purchased through them.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us this evening, talking about the book. It's a fantastic book. If you are into, I mean, in this isn't fiction. This is somebody who, she's plied her craft and some of her investigations into this book, poured her heart out into it. If you get a chance, please pick it up. Not just because she's a friend of mine, but she's good at what she does, and she deserves a good read for her first book. You got it.
Thank you very, very much, Kevin. I really appreciate it.
We'll have to have you back in to co-host.
Yeah.
I think you can do just as good a job as this guy.
Oh, should be much better.
Right. After years of being in print.
We are going to step aside. And when we come back, we'll speak with members of the Brockton City Council. Right here on Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, the final segment of Monday Night Talk. Again, we thank good friend Maureen Boyle, author of Shallow Graves, The Hunt of the New Bedford Highway Serial Killer. Now, three suspects in front of me for Brockton City Council. Actually, they are incumbents. We have, starting from my left to my right, we have Ward 2 City Councilor Tom Monahan. Sir?
Thank you, Kevin. Glad to be here.
We have three-time council president and at-large councilor Bob Sullivan.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Representative.
He already has his own.
That's yours.
And I was told I would say it. This is like the fourth time that I've been told that I say his name wrong. So I know him as Moises Rodriguez, but he's saying it's Moises Rodriguez. Or how do you say it?
Well, if you're going to pronounce it properly, it should be Moises Rodriguez.
Ooh. Yeah.
Or Moises or Moses Rodriguez.
Okay. Oh, I apologize. I've been working on it, though. I did get the Moises part. Gentlemen, welcome. Glad we could assemble you. What we've been trying to do over the past few weeks, try to have, I separate the fields. You get the folks who are seeking office and the folks who are serving in office. And what I wanted to do, actually I reached out to Councilor Sullivan and I'm like, Counselor, I gotta have you come in. And he says, all right, I gotta round up my posse. And and he did. And I will tell you, I almost wasn't here this evening because I was actually asked if I'd be interested in moderating a debate, as there's supposed to be a debate on cable tonight. So there was a thought as to if I'd be interested in partaking, and I couldn't because I'm here. So,
well, we appreciate that.
Yeah. You probably would have done a better job there. You're a good moderator.
Everybody has their own strengths and weaknesses, but I'm glad to have you. I've been privileged in the past to be able to conduct interviews with all of you. You sure that's your phone? Be careful before you walk off. You sure that's not? Hold on. You sure it's not mine?
No, it's my phone.
Okay, just making sure. Maureen Boyle coming back for a phone. I've had a chance to interview each one of you gentlemen, have conversations with you. You've been on this program in the past, and we've done media stuff elsewhere, as you gentlemen know now that the Brockton radio station is on the air. It's 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the moment. It's building steam. But here you guys are. You're here to talk a little bit about the seeking re-election. I think the first thing I want to ask you, though, give me your thoughts. We are remembering. We're commemorating a day that you know what, will forever be burned into our history, where we were attacked here on the soil. And it's not the first time it has happened, but it's the most recent time that it has happened, and lives were lost. Heroes were, you know, recognized. You know, how many? 343 firefighters, police, EMT workers rushed into the building to save lives on that day. You know, multiple planes. One of those, I think, one or two planes.
Two planes
from Logan Airport. You know, where were you guys individually? Do you remember where you were?
Yeah, I was working, as usual, for the gas company during the day, and I was hearing these reports on the radio, and I was like, what the heck is going on here? I never got even a chance to go home until after the day was over and watch it on TV, and I was in total shock of what had happened. It just showed the vulnerability that we had as a nation of being attacked like that, because you never would expect anything like this to happen. I think it was just total shock, and when I got home and watched this, I just was like, just could not believe what had happened, and all the stories that came out about it, the bravery, the heroism, the country actually pulling together finally as one, and you know, to fight this terrorism. And it's a bad thing that happened, but it was a good thing that happened that really brought this country together, I think. And you saw a lot of my son joined the Marine Corps right away as soon as that happened. You saw a lot of the young men and women join the armed forces to fight for this country. And I think it's a lot of emotions through that. A lot of different things happened on those planes. The people on the planes, the story you heard afterwards, going down in that field, right, fighting, you know, giving their last breath to try to save, you know, anybody else from being killed. It was really, really just amazing. But I'll tell you, that was something.
Really. Councilor Tom on hand. At-large Councilor Bob Sullivan.
What were you doing? Day, Kevin, that we'll never forget. It's etched in our minds, and it will be for all time, for history. I was actually going to a Boston meeting. I was on the expressway, bumper-to-bumper traffic, when the news broke, and it was just shocking. And what I will say is 2 months later, after 9/11, I went down to New York to run the marathon. And at that time, Ground Zero was still smoking, and my brother was living in Manhattan, and it was just a scary time. Great time to be an American, as Representative Cantwell said. It was just really a feeling as a result of that terrible day of coming together as one. And I think that does, to some extent, continue to this day, and especially on this anniversary.
It's Councilor Sullivan, Councilor Rodriguez.
Well, I was actually working at Brockton Hospital at the time.
Wow.
And we were actually in the lobby watching the first building actually on fire. But the week before, a glider had actually crashed onto the Statue of Liberty. So we actually thought it was a small plane that actually had crashed into the tower. Okay. Not thinking anything about it. And as you're sitting there watching this whole thing, you see this dot coming. Mm-hmm. from afar and slamming into the second tower. And at the time, you basically realize that, you know, this country is under attack. Yeah. And it's, to me, someone that actually served in the military, it was one of the first instances in a very long time where America was under attack by a foreign force. We had a civil war. We had Timothy McVeigh and in Oklahoma and some of the internal stuff that actually happened in the country. But this was the first time that we were involved in an attack by an outside force. And it brought us to a different level altogether. Because I remember when I was in the Navy, a lot of times you have these interchanges with the other folks from other militaries. And one of the things that I always tell you is, oh, you guys always go out and bomb somebody and then you come home, nothing happens to your homeland. And this was actually the first time where we had paid a price, a dear price, to a point where this country will never be the same, because 9/11 is etched in everybody's memory. No matter how far away you are, once September rolls around, it somehow brings it back. I mean, it was 16 years ago. It seems like it was last night.
Right.
You know, and that's how I remember that day.
Jim, do you have a question?
I'm just thinking of the post 9/11 world. You just think of how much things have changed for us. Everything from the security that we're buildings that we go into, or just being a little more familiar with your surroundings when you're going to places. It really it has changed the psyche for us all, and you know the preference I'd say from what each of you have talked about. I think that the thing that I prefer to always focus on is saying how it really did bring people together, so that people could put aside whatever major differences they may have had to say, look, we're one people, we're one country, we stand for something in this world, and we're not going to let these not going to let the acts of these few terrorists really change us, mm-hmm. because they really thought that that was going to trigger. They thought it was going to trigger some kind of worldwide pushback against us, and it brought us much closer together, and I think helped us define what we're going to do for future generations.
That's right. I think I want to ask you, how do you feel that the events that happened on that day, how has that changed things, even down to a local level? You are elected officials, serve a city of anywhere between 94,000 to 100,000, depends. 120,000. Who knows?
Probably more.
But you know, it's again, it's a thriving, busy community. How has what happened 16 years ago affected how you guys govern the city of Brockton?
It's nothing safe anymore. If there's a bomb scare at the school, it's a major thing. I mean, it was before, but it's even worse now. You don't know. Everything they look into, if it happens, what are they looking for first? If it's terrorism or not. Mm. That's something that they look at all the time now. So, I mean, you've lost that sense of security that you used to have. You think you're safe. Nobody thinks they're safe anymore. Any of these things that happen at anywhere in the city, you never know, is it an act of terrorism? Is it just something that some strange person did or something like that? I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's probably the biggest thing I get out of it. Just really, no one's feeling safe anymore, even in our homeland. We just don't. You're always on guard. You're never sure what's happening with that. So that's the way I look at it.
You know, Kevin, I think back to when President Bush went to Ground Zero and grabbed the bullhorn. I think people, as a result of 9/11, are looking for leadership. And on the local level, we can peel it back a little bit to the day-to-day taxpayers and constituents that Moses, Tom, and I represent in the city of Brockton, and Representative Cantwell in his district at the State House. And I think that's what people are looking for. Like, for the city of Brockton, they're looking for a safe community, a clean community, making sure the kids have a quality education. But at the end of the day, when they pick up that phone to call their elected local officials, they want to make sure that results happen quickly. And Moses and I, as councilors at large, serving the whole city, you know, all seven wards, all 28 precincts, we do that. And Tom, you know, represents Ward 2, where I grew up, and you know, it's a really important part of the city of Brockton. So I would answer it that way. I think that people, as a result of that tragedy, are really looking for leadership and making sure that their voices are heard.
Moses?
Well, I want to second what Councilor Sullivan actually said. In addition, basically to add the fact that 9/11 made us walk down the street and always look behind us. You know, before you could walk around like thinking that this is, you know, big, you know, bad, the USA where no one can touch us.
Impervious.
And I think 9/11 brought that back to in a smaller scale, saying how, you know, how vulnerable we all are in a way. I mean, nowadays I hear these, you know, the president talking about building a wall to prevent for national security, but yet we forget that these terrorists came to America on planes. They didn't cross the Rio Grande or climb a wall somewhere to come into our country to do us harm. So just because we're proposing to build a wall, by building a wall, you're not making the country any safer. Mm. And I think in my honest opinion, I think one of the things that actually makes us safer is to bring awareness. You know, have people become more aware of their surrounding, more aware of what their neighbors are doing, more aware of what goes on in their neighborhoods. Because believe it or not, even the assaults that took place on 9/11 started locally. It started locally with those terrorists taking flight lessons locally. It was not done in space somewhere. It was done locally. Mm. These individuals living in neighborhoods,
They were technically sleeper cells.
Yeah, so people actually saw these individuals doing the things that they were doing leading up to the event. So I think one of the things that we need to do as a country is to basically, you know, come together and look around and become neighbors that like we were supposed to be.
But haven't things changed? I mean, it's not like when we grew up. When we grew up, you know what? You get kicked out of the house at 6, 7 o'clock in the morning. Of course, embellishing here, it was probably 8 o'clock in the morning, but you know, you were sent out into the streets and you hung out with folks. Your parents knew the people next door and the people next door, and everybody knew each other. These days with social media, it's not so much the kids outside playing, and it's not so much. I mean, you have functions that happen and folks come together, but it's not like it was when it was a real the fabric of a tight-knit community where everybody knew everybody.
But that's everywhere. It's that.
But that's what I'm saying.
You're right. As you walk, as we walk the wards and what have you in the city, you know, you've talked to people. They don't even know who the neighbors are. That's why a lot of, and that's the truth, and that's part of safety in your neighborhood, too. You used to look out for each other. You look out for each other's homes. Now you don't know them from Adam.
Right.
So you're not even watching out for your friends and your neighbors next door like you used to. I mean, one good thing with just Edgar's Park, which we worked on to develop that, that has brought the neighbors all around together. That park is loaded every day. They're starting to know their neighbors. They're starting to make new friends or what have you. But that's been a positive thing for the city. But like you said, and these guys agree, obviously, it's just not the same as it used to be. The mother, if you were sent out by your mother, and you did something wrong down the street, somebody else's mother knew you, and they were going to take care of you.
Yeah, they called you.
Exactly.
Right, exactly. You get a backhand from them, then when you got home, you get a backhand from your mother or father.
I got
right.
a few backhands.
Right, right.
But I also think, Kevin, the changing times based upon the economy. So parents that used to, when I grew up, would you know work 9 to 5, then come home, they'd be home there in the afternoon. You'd usually, typically at that time, had two parents in the household. Those days, unfortunately, have changed. Mm-hmm. You have single families, single parents leading a family, working 2 or 3 jobs. City of Brockton is a poorer community in the Commonwealth, and that's just the reality. People are working hard, and I concur with you as well. The kids don't go out and play basketball or football or soccer. They're
they do, but it's to a lesser degree than they used to.
It's a lot lesser, and I think that also you can look at why the childhood obesity has changed so much over the times. So there's a lot of things we could talk about, but I think the more important thing is that there's an election in the city of Brockton coming up real soon.
The segue is what do you feel are the issues? What are the issues that I don't know how much bigger your race is compared to Tom. I know Tom has an opponent.
Mm-hmm. We have a opponent.
Yes. Yeah, but you don't have.
We always have a opponent.
But here's the thing: you don't have
a director.
It's no. It's not as deep as it has been in the past, where you had, I remember we've had forums, you had 15, 18, 20 people who are all running, to try to be the 8 who are going to be on the ballot come November. I think you might just have the 8 you need for November. You don't have to worry about the prelims. I don't think you have to worry about the prelims. Mm-hmm. What do you feel are the tried and true issues that residents want answers for from you guys? Tom seems to be the leader tonight. So
I mean, there's so many different issues. We have a lot of things going on. These guys.
Pick your favorite.
You can go. I mean, it's the same story. Public safety, education. We have issues coming before us with the mayor's talking about buying the desal plant. That's another thing. What are you shaking your head about?
Not going to happen.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
No. But
these are different issues that are coming on. The budget. There's a ton of different things. It's you can talk about any of them really.
We're also not to interrupt you,
go
Tom,
ahead.
But we're also we've already put money aside in the last budget. As you know, there was the Webby case, the McDuffie case, the Hancock case.
Equity and education.
Absolutely, yep. And the city of Brockton is going to work with other gateway communities, other poorer communities in the Commonwealth to file another lawsuit. That's just a fact. So there's so many issues right now. But what I will say, Kevin, is in this election coming up, it's really important for the future of the city of Brockton. Now, Councilor Rodriguez and myself and Councilor Falwell are 3 of the incumbents. Of course, Councilor Barnes is not. not seeking, Councilor Large Barnes is not seeking re-election, and our good friend Paul Staninsky from Ward 4, after 12 years, is retiring as well,
former police
chief. But it is an important election. There is, and this isn't conjecture, this is fact, there are a lot of groups working to try to get certain incumbents out of the picture of the city of Brockton. So we're just working to really stress the importance of having proven experience and leadership.
It's funny you say that, because I like visiting John McGarry on a regular basis, popping in and having conversations. You know, John just getting back on his feet and coming in. But, you know, one of the things when I sat down to kind of get an idea as to who the people were who were bringing their paperwork in, getting all the signatures okayed, and then walking across the hall to the clerk's office, he's like, I don't get this year. You've got more people who are, you know, they don't have a reason why. They're just because they were asked to run.
Yep.
You should run. We need you to run. We're going to back you to run. Not because they want to run, because they want, you know, there's something that they want to kind of help the city to achieve. Whether it's, you know, finding more money for, you know, although the city council can't find the money, it's the mayor's budget and you guys do the cuts. But the idea of being able to be advocates for that money, for education, and ask the mayor, hey, keep it in your thoughts. His frustration, John McGarry's frustration, the executive director of elections, is that people coming in don't know what the heck they're doing. Some of them who are going, they're clueless, and he's frustrated because this is a guy who held office, and he held office for a reason. There was a purpose, not because someone goes, hey, listen, we're trying to get it, you know, we're trying to get as many votes on this particular board or committee, you know, to kind of get things pushed through.
Yeah, and I haven't heard reasons why people are running. I haven't seen any of these people at council meetings. I've seen a few that have been, there's a couple that have been that were on different boards that'd be here, there, been there, here and there, but I can't put my finger on why. But I know, as Councilor Sullivan said, there are groups out there pushing people to run just to run because they have agendas. And I think what they think they're going to do is put these people in and they'll be their puppets and try to push their agenda. They don't realize the job that we have to do. We have to take phone calls every day, deal with the constituents' problems every day. That phone doesn't stop ringing 7 days a week.
Subcommittees.
Subcommittee meetings, plus our own meetings. It's a job. It really is. It's a vocation, but it's also a job. And it's every single day that you have to do it.
Yeah, I think, Kevin, when you talk about elected officials, be it on the state level, federal level, or where we are on the local level, it's public service. So when I'm out there knocking on doors right now, and I've been doing it for 12 years, you know, it's to ask for your voter confidence so I can be your advocate. I can be your voice on a daily basis. And I think that's what it's about. So to just say, hey, I'm running for the city council in the city of Brockton, great, you know, that's democracy, go at it. But you have to have a purpose and a reason, and mm-hmm. Moses has proven, he worked for a mayor, Tom has proven in the ward, our good friend Dennis Ianeri in Ward 3, he's got a good fight, he's the dean of the council, and really, I'm asking the voters, and again, we're nonpartisan in the city of Brockton, Democrat, Republican, unenrolled independents, go to the polls. You know, we're fortunate, the three of us, we're not on the ballot next Tuesday the 19th, but it's right, a preliminary to city of Brockton, then November 7th, the general election, and we're asking anybody and everybody that's a registered voter to get out there, because your vote's going to matter. Your vote's going to count.
Well, it is true. I mean, when you sit down and think about it, you've got a ton of people who actually have absolutely no idea how city government functions. You've got people running to bring in these mega factories into the city to provide all these jobs. They're going to create jobs. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. And not really understanding that when you are part of the legislative branch, your function is to represent the individuals that put you in there. In our case, is to work in the finances of the city, to represent and to answer the questions that our constituents actually have and do something about those questions. But in terms of, we're not the executive branch of city government, so a lot of the individuals who are running actually even lack the understanding how city government functions, thinking that, yes, I was asked to run, but when I'm in there, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and not realizing that, you know what, your powers are limited. There's certain things that you can do, certain things that you can't do, right. And you need to understand that, and you need to have the right reason for running.
And right now, a lot of the people who are running do not have the right reasons to do it. And shame on those individuals who are pushing these good intentional people that could be serving in other means, in other ways in the city, but for some odd reason they're being pushed into running for positions that are totally unequipped to run.
If you have a moment to kind of toot your horn, this past legislative session that is about to close out, what do you feel are some of the accomplishments of the Brockton City Council as its constructed councilor?
I think one of the things that we did, and we did real well, and to be honest with you, I'm very happy with the colleagues that I have in the council, is the fact that, you know, we have been pushed by the executive branch, by the administration, and we stood our ground. We stood our ground on various issues in terms of finances, in terms of passing ordinances that we felt were necessary to be passed. Where we were pushed, we stood our ground. We continue to defend the interest of the folks in our community. We continue to hold department heads accountable by bringing them in front of us on a regular basis. We are holding steady in the sense in terms of the finances of our city. Believe it or not, we could have been in by far in worse shape financially had you not had this kind of a council to basically demand and also execute the budget the way we did.
How about fears, though? You look at the past 2 years, you talk education, you talk funding. We've already talked, we teased equity in education, a lawsuit that other communities are jumping in. It isn't just Brockton leading the charge on this. You look last year, you look at FY 2017, there was conversation, a $10 million deficit for the school district. You look this past fiscal year that we're in now, 2018, and the deficit grew to $16 million. And then some of the finger pointing was you had charter schools and how the state was divvying out the cash. What happens for fiscal 19 that you're not looking at a $20 or $25 million deficit to be able to fund schools? You're not talking about closing schools. You're not talking about class sizes of 40, 45, 50 students. What do you do?
I'll tell you, the governor better step up in the state, because $8 million of that is because of the charter schools,
right?
And they want a second one, which the city of Brockton voted against. All right, and the formula that they made for the low-income students was changed also. I know our state delegation is fighting for that, and we are fighting for that. But that is something that is almost out of our hands, that we have in front of us just starting out. You're $8 million in the hole. That is a big, big, big challenge for the city, and we are all fighting it, and we are working with our state delegation. The mayor is working with the state delegation to all trying to get something done with that formula and to get the governor to come through for us and do what's right.
Kevin, I think one of the fortunate things the city of Brockton and Representative Campbell can concur with this is we have three state reps who represent the city of Brockton. We have Claire Cronin, whose uncle was a former mayor of the city of Brockton, Michelle Dubois and Jerry Cassidy, former city councilors, Mike Brady, our state senator, former city councilor. So they have the experience on the local level. They work great in collaboration. However, on a local level, and Moses said it, we're a Form B type of government. We're a strong council, weak mayor. On paper, it's a misnomer, though. The mayor works full time. He calls the shots relative to hiring and firing. But what Moses said is 100% accurate. We stand firm, and we're fighting the battles that need to be fought. We're still continuing to fight the power plant. We're continuing to fight Mayor Carpenter on many things, overspending on overtime. I think that's what a legislator needs to do. We're passing ordinances such as the shopping cart ordinance to clean up the city of Brockton. There's different
checks
things.
And balances.
Absolutely. There's 11 members of the city council. Four of us serve at large, seven in the wards. And I think at the end of the day, we have a good skill set, good mix of people, and I hope the voters go out on September 19th and November 7th to re-elect Moses Rodriguez, Tom Monahan, and Robert Sullivan.
Well, no, don't put a punctuation on just yet. I was going to ask Moses one more question.
Well,
just so the
folks keep saying your name. It's good.
As we are, we're getting ready to wrap up here. As we've been fortunate enough to have three city councilors, Bob Sullivan, Tom Monahan, and Moses Rodriguez. Moses, just to kind of close things out here, how important is experience?
As Bob was saying, you know, when you look at the folks in the at the state level, there were people who served in government. I believe the fact that you have the heart. I mean, you did start out by saying, you know, that the budget this year was last year was $8 million, $10 million, possibly a little higher.
But we're talking about the school budget,
the school budget
deficit. Yeah.
So I honestly believe you need to have all the experience on your side to deal with these issues, mm-hmm. and also be able to hold people accountable, because I think there's also some ways of cutting back on certain things, because we're a little top heavy in certain instances where we can kind of look into trimming some of the fat that exists in certain areas, but also at the same time group together a strong force to basically go after the state to provide us more funding.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for coming in and having a great conversation. Representative, thank you for sitting in. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Hey, until next week at 6:15 p.m.
Have a great evening. The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. 95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.